Thank you so much. We're excited to be here. I'm excited to be here with my friend Lisa C. And we had a little bit of time to chat before we came into the studio to the show. And we were talking about when we met and when we last saw each other. And we met out in Tucson.
Right, at the book festival.
At the book festival. So first off, power to book festivals.
Yes,
because
power to book festivals.
They really do bring not just not just readers to authors, but authors to authors. So that's the first time we met. And now all these years later, I am so thrilled to welcome her to Winston-Salem. It is my new hometown, and I was telling her as well about the bookstore, Bookmarks, and how it really is one of the most genuinely loving book communities that I have ever had the privilege
of
being part of.
Because not only are we book buyers and book readers, and you're a book writer, but we're on the board for Bookmarks.
So yeah.
I'm triply happy then to be here.
Exactly. So now Lisa is on her whirlwind book tour for The Island of Sea Women. Get a good close-up of that because you are going to want this book. Go look for the bright blue book. It is beautiful. It is already an instant New York Times bestseller. Not just in the United States, but also in Canada. And you all know my love for Canadians. I love them. So Canadians who are watching, thank you. Americans who are watching, thank you. I'm saying thank you for her because I love her so much. And she is as brilliant a writer as she is a loving person and a great friend. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great. It's wonderful to be here.
So now let's talk about the book.
Yes.
So that we can give people the goods. This book is about Jeju Island. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Henyo. And the Henyo women, who are women divers.
Right.
I actually went online, and I think I tweeted something about this. I went online and found a PBS show that went there and, like, followed the divers, and they did their dance that they traditionally
do. Right.
And song. And I thought, it's just like what Lisa wrote about in this book. So do you want to give us a little bit about...
Yes. Yeah, so on this island, Jeju, which is off the tip of South Korea, they have had, for hundreds of years, a matrifocal society. So not a matriarchy, but a society focused on women. And so for hundreds of years, these women have been free divers. They take deep breaths. They dive down about 60 feet. That's deep enough to get the bends. They stay underwater for 2 to 3 minutes, harvest seafood. So they have been the breadwinners in their families, and their husbands are the ones take care of the children, who do the cooking, who take care of the house, who take care of the elders.
I absolutely loved that.
Yeah.
I thought, why have we not had this sort of cultivate and grow and be nurtured and go global? Because I would love to strap on a papoose on my husband, let me tell you. Our little dog would fit perfectly in there. But that was fascinating that I had never heard of these women or this society. And that's part of what we often talk about historical fiction on the show. And that's something that I love about historical fiction is that you can pick up a novel and not know anything about these Henyo women, they say that right, and then close it and you have learned about this entire true, beautiful, genuine, not just group of women and people, but I didn't know about April.
Third.
Right. Either. The massacre.
Well, you know, this is a part of the world we still don't know that much about. I mean, our education tends to be pretty Eurocentric. So when I was in school anyway, we learned all about World War II in Europe. And, you know, if you think of all the books, all the movies, all the television shows that take place during World War II in Europe. And yes, there are a couple of films that take place in Asia, and there are a couple of books. I don't think there's a single television show that's ever taken place, you know, in the Pacific theater during World War II or beyond. And so this is a way to sort of, you know, look at that history because, obviously, Asia is becoming increasingly important in our lives. And North and South Korea are in the news almost every day. And so I think it's very helpful for us to know some of that history. And I agree with you about historical novels. You know, what I love about books is when you open them up and you step into another world, you step into another culture, you step into another time, and you're turning the pages because you want to know, you know, is the guy going to get the girl? Are they going to find the killer? You know, what's the conspiracy?
What's going to happen to the girls?
What happened to them? Are these girls ever going to become friends again or come back to each other? You know, all of those things that keep you turning the pages. But along the way, you can learn all of this other stuff.
History. Yes, that's I could not agree with you more. And that's something you do beautifully in this, is that you take facts and history, and it's not based entirely on those. Those are the backdrop.
Right. It's just
the
backdrop.
And then the characters are so rich and loving. And these, you write a lot about women, about sisterhood, about mothers and daughters, in all your work. And in this one is another, I used to think, well, how many stories can you tell about sisters and mothers? And I'm realizing a bazillion.
Well, but here's the thing, Sarah. If you think about the whole history of Western literature, you know, who's been writing those stories?
Yes.
Men. And so you can go back and you can find, yes, the Bronte sisters and Jane Austen and George Eliot. And, you know, there are a few women. But really, it's only the last, let's say, 50 to 75 years that women have been writing, getting published, and telling women's stories. Mm-hmm. So to see these stories about women, you know, whether it's women's friendship, sisters, mothers and daughters, but written by women, I think is really important.
Absolutely.
And those stories are infinite.
Exactly.
Because they still are relatively unmined, you know?
Right, and that's exactly, it's a good way of thinking about it as a reader out there, that these are riches that have yet to be plucked up from, they're there, they're like buried treasure that someone has left there, and we have not found that treasure yet, and you are doing that. I'm hope in my work, that's a goal that I have, and I admire other women writers who are doing that, is that taking those treasures, bringing them to the surface, and saying, hey, look, kind of like what they do with their diving, going down and getting these beautiful, wonderful, you know, treats and bringing it back up and saying, look at what we've found.
Mm-hmm.
And the powerfulness.
The other aspect of that is that, you know, especially if you think about friendship, there are all kinds of stories of, you know, friends come back for their 20th college reunion, or, you know, let's all three friends get jobs in Manhattan. And hijinks ensue.
Right.
I mean, there are all kinds of stories like that, and I'm not putting them down. They're great. They're fun. We all like them. But I do think that there's kind of what I call it, the dark shadow side of women's relationships.
That's my favorite side, because it's the truth.
Yeah. And so we will tell a friend something we won't tell, you know, our husbands, our boyfriends, our lovers, our mothers, our children. And so it's a very particular kind of intimacy. And whenever you have that, you are vulnerable, you know, and you're vulnerable to be hurt, you're vulnerable to betrayal. And that's those dark shadows that I love to, well, in the Island of Sea Women, I know this sounds corny, but dive into.
No, it's true. And I think that's part of what, and you know, before I knew you, I was a fan, though. I was a fan first, guys. I was a reader, because you would bring those dark shadows out and you would let me read about these women and these sisters and all of them in all of her work. And I would think, okay, the shadowiness that I feel, that is not wrong. That is something to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a vulnerability. And that's can be a very powerful thing to bring women together. And so that was really important.
But also we've all experienced it.
Yes.
You know, we've all had someone, let's just say in kindergarten, where we said, we're going to be best friends
forever.
For life.
Yes.
You know, pinkies.
Yes.
And then maybe you're in high school and you said, we're going to be best friends forever. And then maybe you have a roommate in college and you said, we're going to be best friends forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't always turn out that way, although sometimes it does. But we do have friends at different points in our lives who may come back into our lives at different times. And I love how that feels when you make those connections again. Actually, the day the Island of Sea Women came out, my best friend from high school called me. Her mom had just passed away. and she wanted me to come to her mom's funeral the next day. So on day two of my book tour, I went to her mom's funeral.
Wow.
And we don't see each other very often, but it was this instant connection because it's so long ago, it's so deep. You know, especially when you're kind of growing up, you're still your own pure, raw self.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't really become who you're going to be. And so you still kind of connect on that level. So we were sitting together at the lunch, and it truly was as though no time had passed. And I think that's one of the things that's so great about these types of relationships.
And I think that's beautifully said. And also, these women, all of them that you write about, you let us see that it's okay to grow. It's almost like a rubber band, that relationship can stretch and grow, and you can be far apart, but you're still connected. And when you come back together, that
and sometimes it can just snap
and
apart.
Sometimes it can snap, but you know that there's a beauty in even that happening, because you had that relationship and you had that life experience and that friendship. And I appreciate that so much. I appreciated it years ago when I read it, knowing that that was that sort of growth and expand and contract was going to happen with not just friendships, but with sisters, siblings, mm-hmm. with your mother,
mm-hmm.
that was going to happen, that you were going to feel far apart and yet you could come back together.
Right.
And there is that, I think there's that danger of it could snap. And I think that's what makes it even more precious though, right. when it does come. So, this is another beautiful story of women coming together and loving each other and going apart. And then I thought it was masterfully written and well done for the characters. And then the historical facts were amazing. So mm-hmm. tell us, what was your first interest in writing about these diving women?
So actually, it's about 10 years ago now. I was sitting in a doctor's office, and you know how you're like waiting and waiting for the doctor to call you in, and I was flipping through some magazines, and there was just a tiny little article, one small photo, one paragraph about these diving women, and I tore it out of the magazine and kept it. And of course, I had another book to finish and another two to write. But finally, there came a moment where I was like, it's now or never.
Yeah.
And I did go to Jeju Island. I should tell you that as recently as the late 1970s, there were still about 30,000 of these women divers. They would retire at age 55 if they lived that long. Today,
30,000?
Yeah. And so today, there are under 4,000 of them left.
Gosh.
And the youngest one is 55. So when I was there, I interviewed women in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, most of whom were still diving. And they say that in about 15 years, this culture is going to be gone from the earth. And it's partly for this reason that UNESCO has given them that designation of a intangible world heritage tradition. Again, because it's about to disappear.
Yeah.
So I really did feel this pressure of, if I don't do it now, I might miss out. And especially if you're interviewing people in their late 80s and 90s, I can't wait 5 years. I can't wait 10
right.
years. Because, and the other thing about people like that is they have lived through so much history. And to hear their first-person accounts of what it was like during Japanese colonialism, what it was like during the Sino-Japanese War, during World War II, when the country was divided, during the Red Scare, during this lead-up to what's known as the 4-3 incident.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived it. And to hear those details from people who lived it, then I can use those details in the book. And we all know real life is stranger than fiction. And so whenever I can use the real details from somebody's life, even if it's just something really small, then I just think that makes a book all the more richer.
Yeah, that's what makes it feel real, even
mm-hmm.
though it's fiction. And we have this conversation almost every time we have the show. Jim asked me, but what's historical fiction? Isn't that a paradox? And I hadn't ever stopped to think about it. And I thought, it is kind of, because you think of history as being fact, and fiction as being not fact, and yet we write historical fiction. But I think the difference is that those details that you said from real life, they make the emotion real, And I think, at least for me as a reader and as a writer, when I feel the emotion of an event from the past, it feels more real.
Right.
Than just right. seeing the
Absolutely.
Facts written
and,
down.
And, you know, we do tend to learn history sort of about the front line of history. The wars, the dates, the generals, presidents.
And not, you like know, you said earlier, who's writing that, too.
Yeah, and who's writing it. But if you take one step off that front line, who's there? It's women, it's yeah. children, it's families, and they're there every step of the way. And they're the ones who are living it, you know, really living it. And I always use this example, of course, this wasn't fiction, but when we think of all the thousands and thousands and thousands of books that were written about the Holocaust, what's the one book we all remember? The Diary of Anne Frank,
yes.
right? So one girl, her family, and through her eyes, through this one girl's eyes, you can experience that whole larger history. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, again, that was not fiction, but you can take that idea and have these fictional characters who are experiencing this larger history. Mm-hmm. And what that allows us as readers to do is to connect to it and to think about ourselves. What would I do in that situation? Would I be courageous? Yeah. Would I be a coward? Would I... you know, rise to the occasion? Would I betray someone? And that's the real gift of fiction, that it puts us in the shoes and in the soul of the character.
I totally agree. And I think also it helps us to empathize with the humanity mm-hmm. of the situation
right.
and not just, I think sometimes in history it's very black or white
right.
and it's very judgy.
Well,
because
and
right
you
wrong.
Get those numbers.
Right.
If you say 30,000 people died, it's like you can't really absorb it.
Right.
But if you have one person who loses someone, then you feel it.
Yes, exactly. And so you went to the island. I want to back up mm-hmm. and talk about that. So you went there to do research. How long were you there? How did you?
So I was only there a couple of weeks. But before I go, I have so much set up. And I've already done so much research that then my visit is very, very targeted. So I met with shamans, I met with researchers, I met with scientists. I spent a lot of time with the diving women themselves. And some of the stuff really was set up ahead of time, but a lot of it was just somebody saying, oh, you have to go talk to so-and-so.
That's the best.
Now that you're here, oh,
yeah.
go talk to so-and-so. But also, because these are diving women, just walking along the beach and watching women either getting ready to go into the sea as a group or having them come out of the sea with their harvest and then just sitting and talking to them. And then this other category of women who I just loved were women who really are semi-retired. And so what they do, or maybe they're injured, and so they have these cute little cushions that they strap to their behinds. They sit on the sand with their knees up like this, and they sort algae.
Oh.
They sort algae and seaweed that's washed ashore the night before. And so I would just walk up to them and, you know, and sit down and start talking. And sometimes, oh, I'm going to sneeze.
Oh,
sometimes
you.
They
live.
Were. They were.
Bless you.
I've been on the road a long time.
We need to get some of those
yeah,
zinc
well,
lozenges.
Yeah, you have my yeah. zinc lozenges inside there. I don't think I've ever sneezed on air before. I hope we didn't have that sneeze button.
Like I said, that just makes it even better.
Yeah.
Live there.
Yeah. So anyway, some of them were really open, like, sit down, I'll talk to you. And some were like, no, I'm busy, go away. So you just have to, but even that I can use.
Right. No. I actually love that older generation. Mm-hmm. My grandparents are still alive and they're in their later 80s. And it's unfiltered. There's no PC-ness.
Right.
You get raw love, raw hate, raw frustration,
ignorance,
whatever it is, though, it's raw. And there's something beautiful about that, about being around people who aren't so guarded and polished, that you don't know if that's really what they're thinking or what they're saying to you, or you get them, you
mm-hmm.
get the real. And I feel like I can just imagine even that story you just told of these women sitting there and just giving you their raw.
As you know, that the book is sort of framed by these little vignettes that take place in more or less present time. It's 2008.
Right.
And those scenes were completely inspired by those women sitting on the beach because they were so funny. but also that kind of, you know, they like to brag.
Yeah.
They like to banter. They like to tease. They're friendly, but they're also crusty. And I just had to use them. I loved how they looked, and I loved their little cushions. I mean, the whole thing was like, oh, yeah. And so the book opens that way.
It makes me want a children's book with these pictures of these women in it. But do you speak the language?
No.
Okay.
But I had three different interpreters. One was a very young woman. She was about 20. She was at the Jeju University. And she actually was the person who was with me when I was interviewing women on the beach. And so you know how in that opening scene, Young-suk there, she's older lady sitting on her cushion, and she asked this girl, oh, will you put your cell phone by my ear? I actually have a photo of that on my website, because every woman would say that to this girl. Will you put your cell phone? I need to call my son. I need to call my nephew. You know, you're so pretty, and he's looking for a wife.
Oh, my God.
Like over and over and over again. So I used that.
I loved it because it's her way of getting them to go away. She's wanting them to go away. So it really is that she's pretending to be, like,
helpful.
Senile or whatever, or you know,
right. But she's really just trying
to. Really, she's smart. Yeah.
She's evading them,
and I feel like.
But it was inspired by seeing that over and over again with this real, you know, this real person who helped me. And then the other one, her mother was a henyo, and her mother's father had been a Japanese collaborator, and so, and then the daughter is now an English professor. Who's, of all things, her area of expertise is Ezra Pound. And so she was the interpreter for several interviews, but the one with her mother was especially important.
Uh-huh.
And so her mother, you know, you go in, and they don't have furniture. You know, you sit on the floor, and they poured tea, and we're eating these little special oranges that come from this island that are unique to the island. And her mother was talking about, you know, how privileged her life was as a little girl, as the daughter of a Japanese collaborator. So they lived in a big house. Mm. They had a big garden. They had a pond where the servants kept it stocked with fish. They had fruit trees. They had a vegetable garden. The idea that she would go hungry just was nothing, you know. Yeah. She had sugar. Her father had driven her all over the island in his car. He was one of the few people to have a car.
But she was kind of the basis then.
In some of the details of her life go over to Meja. So she, you know, and this is an older woman, and I, after about 2 hours, I was like, want to take a break? Oh, no, she had so much to tell. And so then a couple hours, are you sure you don't want to take a break? I can come back tomorrow. No, she wanted to keep talking.
You were like, maybe I want a break.
Yeah, but 8 hours.
Oh, Lisa.
8 hours, and she was still going. And at the end of the 8 hours, though, her daughter was, like, pale, you know, just really kind of shaken. And I said, are you okay? And she said, I learned more about my mother today in this one day than I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah. Jim's behind the camera, and I just got chills because that's, wow, like, you were the catalyst then for this daughter to learn history.
But meanwhile, she's doing the translation of it. So she was trying to remain kind of professional and detached. But obviously, it really affected her.
Oh my gosh! Wow! So you were there. So you met with all these people, and you gathered all this info,
and then
once
I come home, then that opens up a whole new area. You know, areas of research that I can do here. But also, by then I had all of these connections on the island, so I can remember once. Just thinking, so the girls, Meja and Young-suk, they go off to do itinerant work.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did these women dive right off their island, but they would do this itinerant diving in, off the coast of Japan, China, Russia.
Right, that's what I found
and
interesting.
And I thought, well, okay, how'd they get there? You know, it's not like they had cars. Yeah. It's not like they had buses. So how did they get to the port? How did they get hired? So I sent that question to somebody, and this was another scholar, and back in the late 70s, the university had done a big oral history project with the women. Now, of course, all of those women are gone now, but she sent me five of them that just answered that question. So like five different people talking about how they got recruited, wow. how they got hired, how they got to the port, what it was like on the boat, what they wore, how cold it was, what they ate, what the man who drove the boat was like. And I had all of these different stories from them that had been recorded, you know, already, whatever that is, 40, 50 years ago.
That's amazing. I want PBS to, like, get all those and put them online because that sounds fascinating. That's the stuff that I feel like is really the, again, we talk about character and we talk about plot. And some people, when they ask, how do you write the books? How do you come up with the ideas? And it's not just about an island. It's not just about April 3rd. It's not just about that. It's about those stories, those what they were eating. And I mm-hmm. think you actually do a fantastic job. But I think in your author's note, I read that you even researched like the culinary and the food and
I do think this is why it's so important to go to a place because it's not just what you see.
I so agree.
It's what it smells like. It's what the air feels like on your skin. It's what it tastes like, you know, all of the senses, you know, what this island is known for its wind. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how does the wind sound in the morning, at night? And so you're really using all of your senses, and then you try to incorporate that into the book so that first I will feel like I'm there, but also that readers will feel like they're there experiencing it themselves.
I am glad. I see now the expert has affirmed my own belief. I went to Prince Edward Island for a month, and I knew I couldn't put out Marilla of Green Gables without having been there on the island, feeling it all and taking it in. So exactly what you said, because then if I can put myself through words back there, then I can take the reader and transport them there too.
Exactly.
So do you go everywhere?
Everywhere
I write about, I go.
And I do hear about writers who, you know, just look it up on the internet, or they have researchers. But why would you do that? This to me, going to these places is like the greatest. I mean, it is my favorite part of the whole process.
I love it.
And I wouldn't trade it for anything.
And now, did your husband ever come with you? Mine doesn't either.
But you know, you're not there you're not on vacation.
No, we're not on vacation. That's what I tell people too. They say, well, when you're on book tour, does your husband, why isn't he coming with you? I'm like,
because he works.
and because this is my job. So right. I'm not here to.
And you wouldn't really wish a book tour on your worst enemy, really, because it's so exhausting.
My mother wanted to come, but she was kind of disappointed. She wanted to come with me up to the Canadian leg of it. I said, you don't realize I'm getting up at like 3 a.m.
to get on the plane.
To meet someone, to drive me to the airport, to get on a plane at 6 a.m. to get somewhere, to get off, to check into the hotel, get changed, go to the event. I'm not sleeping. And do interviews. And I said, this is not something.
I often describe it as being like a package in the mail. You're just being moved from place to place to place, you know, and you don't, I sort of feel like, you know, how you go on FedEx and you can see track where the package is, that's what I'm like. I'm just like, oh, she landed here. Okay, next she's over there. But it's not really very much in our control.
No.
And it's not like there's a lot of free time.
And that's why when this package of Lisa C. has landed in Winston-Salem in my lap, I'm going to do my darndest to make sure you have zinc lozenges and water and are taken care of and everything flows easily, because I know that is the greatest gift to me when I'm on book tour. So Lisa is here, and she's with me first, and then she's doing a whole bunch of interviews, and then she's going to be at Bookmarks tonight for an event at 7. That is sold out. So I just want to make that absolutely clear. It is sold out already, but if you would like a ticket, you can still come at 5:45 p.m. and get on a wait list, and they'll land a handful of people. So you could come, get on the wait list, and then not get in at all. But if you really, really want to come, Lisa will be there. She'll have books that will be signed. You can buy those. Bookmarks can take care of all your needs after the event if you want signed books then. And then Lisa and I are both jogging off to Charlottesville tomorrow for the Virginia Book Festival. So that's an open event. Come out and see her. She's doing multiple events. I will be there too doing an event on Wednesday. So that's the agenda. And I'm thrilled to have her, and I'm thrilled to be sort of her. I'll be your handler.
Thank you so much. This has been great fun, and it's just fun to do this. I loved it.
Well, thank you for being here. And again, this is the book. It's the last thing we want you to remember. If anything, this is what you need to remember. The Island of Sea Women by Lisa C. out now. Go and get it. Get it from your local. Get it from online. Order away. Thanks, guys.